As I surrender all desires that cling to my heart, then my mortality expresses my immortality. Even as a human in this world, I am the fullness of my God self. This is Thought for Today with Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. As I surrender all desires that cling to my heart, then my mortality expresses my immortality. Even as a human in this world, I am the fullness of my God self. Now, this latter point is one that we oftentimes forget. Even as a human in this world, I am the fullness of my God self. Now, let's take that into a little area also. Every stone is the fullness of its God self, but expressing as a stone. Every tree, every bird, every bee, every house, every object, and every atom is expressing in this world as whatever object it is, but it is always its full God self. We want to say that a tree is not as much as a man, and we want to say that a stone is certainly not as much as a fish or something like that. Fish is a lot more advanced in its manner of activity than a stone is. But that's not the point. The point is, in each thing is the allness and the capacity to be the allness. You say, well, how can a stone be the allness of God? Well, how can man be the allness of God? You look at man, and you see man saying to himself, I am man. And that's a joke, because that's only part of what man is. Man is the allness of God. But man says, I am man. I am just this flesh and bone. I am this muscle and sinew and so forth. And I am nothing more. I'm nothing more. And so it is. Now, the minute man starts calling himself divine, he is different. He's different. He begins to bring forth that immortality that's within him. He begins to bring forth the magic that is in him. Now, how would a stone say, I am divine? Well, we don't even know how man says, I am divine. What difference does it make how a stone says it? But just for the fun of it. In our undergraduate course, we have a lesson which says, how do you talk to a stone? And how does a stone talk to you? And we have people coming up with some brilliant understandings that would never have happened had we not asked the question, and had they not been prepared through the lessons to that point. Now, how do you talk to a stone? The same way you talk to yourself. Because a stone is you. You are the creation. You are the creator. You are the allness of that stone. Now, how does a stone talk to you? Same way you talk to the stone. In that same mental capacity. You can say, hi, stone. My, you're a good-looking stone. You're gold. Wow, that's valuable. And you're just a piece of granite that fell off the side of the mountain, and there's just a whole mountain full of you, and you're not really so valuable. And then Mr. Granite says, you think I'm not valuable, huh? You don't realize what I think of sometimes. You don't realize how I visualize my allness. You have a piece of granite visualizing your allness? Sure. And you know the gold? The gold is nice too, but the gold is always thinking of itself. And I'm thinking of myself too, but I'm thinking of my allness. Well, I never thought a stone would think like that. I never thought you, being such a common ruffian type of thing, that the whole mountains are just built of you, of granite, you know, and you have uniqueness and individuality. Well, of course, I'm just a chip off the old block, you know. But the old block goes a lot bigger than just that mountain there. It goes to the allness of the universe, because that's who I am. Well, as we said in our first part of our statement here, as I surrender all desires that cling to my heart, then my mortality expresses my immortality. What are the desires that cling to our heart? Now, is it the desire of a piece of granite to remain part of the mountain? Could be, and could not. Is it the desire of the stone to be itself? Well, could be. Is it the desire of the atom to just be an atom with no other, so to speak, purpose for itself? Well, could be. Why would it be that the desire of the atom is just to be an atom? Because that's all he seems to know who he is. Now, when the atom lets go of "I am an atom" and starts being the allness, then its mortality begins to express its immortality. You see, it's only in the concept of saying "I am the all" that we step into immortality, that we step into the larger picture, the larger framework. But in the process, we lose our individuality, and that is tough. That's tough for everybody, to lose their individuality, to lose their "I am Herb Byerly, and you are Sylvia, and you are Ingeborg, and you are Button, and you are Love, you know, and you are Ellen." Now, what's that all about? That's just a little bit of dust in the infinite spectrum of all. And think about them. What is Ellen? Ellen's nothing but a piece of flesh here with a mind in it and laughter and song and caring. But is that the real Ellen? That would seem to be the real Ellen. And that would be the and then she starts to change. Then she starts to think grand thoughts, and I get after her on that. She starts to think deep, philosophical, metaphysical thoughts, and I say, "Why are you thinking of those things? Why don't you just think of the things that you are right now?" And I try to stop her, and I try to turn her off, and sometimes I succeed. But most of the time, I don't. Most of the time, I cannot stop her from having her mortality expressing its immortality. Most of the time, I can't. I try to stop you guys, too. I try to stop you in many ways from doing it. You know why, don't you? Huh? Do you know why? When you tell a child he can't do something, that's what he's going to do. Ha, ha, ha. And I tell you, you're not immortal, you know, and you shouldn't be thinking these immortal thoughts. And that's just what you're going to think about. That's just what you're going to work on. That's just what you're going to take and make something really important for you. But you don't understand that. You cannot see why a mother says to her child, "Play the piano, play the piano, play the piano," and why she puts up with that racket that he makes you. But she does, and lo and behold, the day comes, he knows how to play the piano. Well, he may not be a Paderewski, he may not be he may not use it professionally, but he'll always use it for enjoyment. President Truman, one of the rather simple, common presidents of the United States, rather remarkable man though, he learned at some time in his life to play the piano. And he would play for his daughter while she would sing. Well, now, she sang okay, but she was no great shakes. And he played the piano okay, but he was no great shakes. But he loved to play the piano. He would sit down and play the piano and meditate. He would sit down and play the piano while he was thinking about some of the most profound issues that came before him and the government. They were sort of a mellowing thing for him. Now, how did he know, or did he know, that one day when he was a little boy and he was practicing, his mother would say to him, "Well, when you're president of the United States and you need to calm yourself, you'll sit down at the piano and play." Now, his mother didn't have that foresight, but she could have said something like that to him, you know? I mean, something just so stupid and so absolutely unreasonable, and yet for him, it happened. And of course, with him, in the simple manner in which he conducted his life, you would think that he would never rise to be the president and to be reelected. You would never think that would happen. But it happened because he had humility. And he may not have had a lot of other things, but he had humility. And it was a time at which the country here needed to learn about humility. And we did. We did. The newspapers at one point, because he was in the White House, and because his daughter was performing in Carnegie Hall or some stupid thing like that, where she didn't belong, and the newspaper said, she was terrible, she was ghastly, she was utterly, you know, unredeemable, but she wasn't really that bad. She was not good, but she wasn't that bad. And so the president got on top of him and said, don't you dare talk about my daughter that way. And bless his heart, you know, he stood right up to him. I mean, here the president of the United States telling the newspapers, the critics, that they shouldn't be critical of his daughter. And what father wouldn't say that? What father wouldn't say that? I mean, it doesn't matter how big you are. It matters how much you care. And I mean, he was a caring man. He was expressing his immortality. Perhaps of all the presidents that we've had, he was perhaps the most spiritually illumined president. And you say, my gosh, I would have never thought that of him. He was such a homespun, ordinary type man. Yeah, he was. He was. He was a man who did not have to pretend, because he had nothing to pretend. He's the highest office in the land. Yes, that's a something. But he had a common, simple little home back in Missouri, and Independence, Missouri, and he had, that's where he went when he retired. Nothing. It was nothing. Just a little clapboard house, two-story high, maybe three bedrooms, if that many, you know. And he and his wife, Beth, lived there, and they were just as happy as can be. And he built up this great presidential library, which all presidents do, to carry the memorabilia of their term in office. But big deal. Big deal. The man who was so common, you might say he was common like dirt, you know, but so deep, like the rich loam soil, that you never know what great wonders are going to come and spring forth from it. Now, I wouldn't call him an intellectual genius. I wouldn't call him a profound man. I wouldn't call him a person who had exceedingly great talents. But he had humility. And there was an evidence that humility is of such tremendous worth, such tremendous power, such tremendous respect that it gained from the whole world. I don't know of his world politics. I'm not that familiar with him. But his local politics were very good. He was a man of the people, and the people loved him. He was a man who had a daughter, and he protected her, and the people loved that. He was a man who didn't buy his way into things. He just acted like a divine human being. And people couldn't understand that, but they loved it. They loved it. Now, I surrender all desires that cling to my heart, and then mortality expresses my immortality. The desires that cling to my heart are aspirations after greatness, aspirations after being impressive, after being something wonderful. I don't say that of Mario Lanza, for instance. He was a great singer. He didn't have to go for greatness. He just sang and sang, and his singing was his greatness. It was really wonderful. He did some marvelous things. Now, he didn't aspire to be a great singer. He just was. He trained. That's true, and that's what he should do. But he didn't aspire. He just was. Now, can you and I, can we train ourselves to be the finest that we can possibly be and then just be it? Or do we have to have a lot of pat on the backs and applause and great audience participation, say, you're wonderful, you're wonderful, you're wonderful, you know? You know? It reminds me of the Stefan Monica experience in Switzerland, where they had one person come to the seminar. And that's wonderful. Did they treat this one person with the allness of the seminar they had to give, or were they reluctant to give their all? Were they like the farmer? You remember the story. The farmer was in church, and the minister was in church, and the church was right next door to the minister's house, so no problem. But there was a tremendous blizzard, and nobody came to church except one farmer. And this farmer came through the blizzard and through the storm. He perhaps didn't live too far away either, but he got there. And so the minister got up in the pulpit, and he gave this farmer one of his great orations. He spoke the full term. He conducted the singing. He conducted the Bible readings. He conducted everything. And he just did himself up proud for the farmer. And afterwards, he went to the back of the church to shake hands with the farmer and wish him well on his way. And the farmer says, "You know, Pastor, I'm a farmer and I have cows. And if one cow comes in from the pasture, I don't give them the feed that I give to all the cows." And the minister, not to be taken back by that, he said, "Farmer Brown, it's not the quantity, but the quality. And you give the quality to the one cow that comes in. And I give the quality to you, to the one parishioner who comes to church. Quantity, how do you measure that? How do you measure quantity for a herd of cattle coming in to eat? But you can only measure quantity, quality. You say one cow should have so much of a bale of hay, and then you give them. So, but it's the same bale, it's the same hay, the same wonderful grass that's in that bale of hay." And so the minister gave to the farmer the total essence of, he could not give less. He could not leave out illustrations. He could not take only 5 minutes of it and give the talk. He had to give the full roaring three quarters of an hour or half hour, whatever he did. But you see, Monica and Stefan spoke to this one person, and they learned more in humility in themselves, in speaking to this one person, than perhaps if they'd had 1,000. Because in 1,000, the people would have generally said, "Wow, great, fantastic." But they had one person to sell on who they were and to demonstrate who they were, and they did a marvelous job. I was in Farmington, New Mexico, and I was called there to give a seminar. And they were quite busy, and they hadn't had time to do promotions like they would have liked to have done. And in all, there were perhaps 10 or 12 people in the room, including the sponsors and myself. Yeah. But I gave them the full seminar. I gave them all the meat and all the potatoes that was their portion to have. And I would give the same to 1,000 people. And I would feel as gratified in speaking to 1,000 people as I would in speaking to those 12, including me. Now, when we are doing anything in the world, anything in life, we express our immortality when we are not limited by the observations we see, by the mortality that we see. And we have to rise above that. We have to rise above them. Now, if we're going to go through life and only give what we feel the situation deserves, not necessarily giving our best, we will never be our best. We will never be our finest. And this is what, even as a human in this world, I am the fullness of my God self. I express the allness of my God self at all times. And though I may seem irrational at times, and I may seem certainly not my God self at times, if you could look behind and see why the piano practicing was going on, so that when I'm president of the United States, I can play the piano and relax, and I can play for my daughter while she sings for me. And the two of us, we love each other. We think we're both wonderful. We think we're both great. And Margaret Truman today, his daughter, I believe she became an ambassador and a few other good things. Amazing lady, amazing lady. We all must do things for ourselves. I sing for myself. And other people say, Herb, you shouldn't sing. Your voice is not that good. And I say to myself, I'm not singing for you. I'm singing for myself. And when I take a walk in the morning mist and get all wet, I'm taking a walk for myself. And as I start out on the walk, oh, I could have stayed in bed. Oh, I could have stayed back and enjoyed reading a book or something. And I say no. I make my affirmations and I walk. And the further I walk, I imagine if I were to walk 60 miles from here to San Diego, I would probably be fantastic by the time I got to San Diego, because I would be so inspired, so uplifted, so energized, because every step I take, I seem to become more energized. Every step I take, I seem to express the fullness of God that I am in a beautiful, wonderful way. And it's great. It's great. And the mortality that says, you're going to be tired, you know, you're going to be this, says to me, immortality. You are pure energy, always working as pure energy, always doing everything as pure energy. You're fantastic. And that's true. That's true. As I surrender all desires that cling to my heart, then my mortality expresses my immortality. Even as a human in this world, I am the fullness of my God self. So let us always remember that. Even as a full human, I'm the fullness of my God self. And everything we do moves us from mortality to immortality. And immortality is the game of being human. Immortality is the game of being divine. Now, what game do you want to play? What game is important in your life? You can make that decision right now. You can give your very best at every moment of your life and have the humility to not need people to say, oh, that was so nice of you to do that. Thank you very much. You just go about as though no one said a word, because you don't need it. If you need it, you won't get it. If you get it, you don't need it. Have a wonderful day. I love you very much.